This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. The sheriff in Las Vegas says he wants to understand the motivation of the killer. He also asked, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
I want to understand the motivation that you describe, okay, to prevent any future incidents. And, you know, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us? And we want to identify that source.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
What jumps out to one of my contacts who does a lot of collection of social media from ISIS and Al-Qaeda for the government is that it's unusual for them to really double down on a claim.
For ISIS to double
down. Yeah, they've made bogus claims in the past. You remember back in June, there was the attack on the casino in the Philippines, and
yes,
they claimed that, but in fact, it was just a bunch of criminals who were responsible for that. But it's unusual to see that kind of doubling down.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, so there's been an interesting development in the horrific incident out in the horrific crime activity that took place in Las Vegas just 2 days ago. And the concern is, and this is something, again, you know, ISIS claimed credit for this early on. I mean, immediately, actually, they doubled down on that. They went on their official news sites. Then they actually said this individual, Paddock, had recently converted to Islam. They even stated in a later email, here was his war name, basically, the name that they give their martyrs, his Islamic name. Now, the FBI initially said there was no evidence that any of this was, in fact, connected to international terrorism. And then yesterday, out of nowhere, basically, out of a press conference, the sheriff of Las Vegas made this statement. I want to play it for you. We played it in the open, but I think it's very important for you to hear exactly what he said and the context in which he said it.
I want to understand the motivation that you describe, okay, to prevent any future incidents. And, you know, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us? And we want to identify that source.
Radicalized unbeknownst to us? Radicalized by who? What is the evidence that has the sheriff concerned that, in fact, there could have been radicalization here? We don't know what type of radicalization. Doesn't mean it's Islamic radicalization, but some kind. Was it political? Was it ideological? Was it religious? But there also appears to be a note. Now, we haven't seen the note, but in the photographs that it came out, there was a shot of what appears to be a note. Jordan?
Yeah, that's right. So we saw that in the papers, online as well. You can see this image. It's been posted almost everywhere now, where near his body, and they don't show, of course, his face, but near his body in the hotel room, there is a small table. There is what appears to be a note with a pen. And so something was written down. Is it a why I did this note? Is it just the ramblings of someone in the midst of this gruesome and horrendous attack? We don't know, but we know that there is something left behind by the shooter. We also can confirm now that he did have those cameras out.
Yes.
Outside his room to so that he would know when any kind of law enforcement approached. And in fact, that's why it appears that the shooting stopped before he was necessarily out of ammo. He had, you know, an entire stock of ammo in the room. But he began shooting. At first, it was security guards who were armed. One of them was shot in the leg. They are expected to recover. So I think at that point, it became a shootout situation where he ultimately took his own life. But you saw that image of the room service card outside his door. That was used
as a camera,
for the camera system. So, I mean, this was really well planned by – that's why it's tough to believe this was just someone who had lost their mind, because way too planned out.
Yeah. Also, this the fact that he had – you know, in addition to the 49 weapons, which is a pretty breathtaking amount to begin with, he also had ammonium nitrate. And that is a substance that's deemed to be an especially hazardous cargo. In fact, ATF has created a program called Beware, encouraging agricultural officials, because it's a fertilizer base, to report any suspicious activities or thefts of ammonium nitrate because of the concern that it could be weaponized. He had it. He had explosives. There's just a lot of questions. All right, Logan, we're going to take those calls and comments from our friends around the country in just a moment.
Yep, and around the world online, 1-800-684-3110. Have your voice heard right now, 1-800-684-3110. Join us online, facebook.com/JaySekulow, Periscope on Twitter @JaySekulow. We'll be right back.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
By the way, our thoughts and prayers continue to go out to the first responders and the families and the victims and those that are still wounded. There are hundreds of people are still in hospitals. And also, right now, it appears that I think the count yesterday was, Logan, maybe we can look this up, there was still 80 or 90 that were still in intensive care. I mean, it was a big number, and hopefully that number will come down as medical. The medical community in Las Vegas is extensive, but it's been taxed here when you have that many wounded. Logan, have you heard anything from any of your friends and colleagues out there?
Just, you know, the situation at hand, they're dealing with it, moving on the best they can. I mean, some of my friends were in the hotel and were posting online pictures of the hotel. Some even knew that we're on the same floor that was happening, so it was pretty intense there. But I think somewhat business is moving on as usual. Las Vegas is one of those towns, sort of like in New York or something like that, that after a little bit, especially now that we're getting sadly used to these type of things, and there's nothing really you can do about it, is they have certain areas closed off, but for the most part, they're trying to get back to normal.
One thing that is got everybody's attention this morning and this afternoon and this evening, I mean, it's captivated the day, and that is the Sheriff Joe Lombardo's statement, which actually sounds like it's in response to a question, but it actually was not responsive to the question asked. And we got our senior counsel, Andy Economo, in here. But let me play. This raises the issue of radicalization. I do need that memo that we have a memo that we did on domestic terrorism, because if there's been radicalization, it may fall within the domestic terrorism statute. But here's what the sheriff said.
I want to understand the motivation that you describe, okay, to prevent any future incidents. And, you know, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us? And we want to identify that source.
So now the girlfriend is back in the United States and being interviewed by the FBI. That's the latest we've been told. Radicalization is a very strong word to be used in the course of an investigation, Andy. When the FBI initially came out and said, based on what they had gathered so far, there was no indication of any international ties. Now, radicalization doesn't necessarily mean international, but the use of the word radicalization conjures up immediately thoughts of groups like ISIS or some politically adverse groups in the United States.
Well, it certainly does, and I don't think that you use those terms carelessly. It suggests to me that he may have had some information that he dropped, that there was information unbeknownst, that's the word that he used, to law enforcement, that this man may have been politically or ideologically influenced by something that is ISIS-like, as you correctly point out. And I think we have to be aware of the fact that that may still be in some subliminal way he was conveying to us something that is occurring that we have not yet fully explored. I wouldn't discount that possibility.
I mean, and radicalization does not mean Islamic radicalization. No one said that, but it means, it could mean a political or philosophical motivation that caused him to commit the act, which raises a legal issue. But let's talk about what the options are here. I mean, it could be a Timothy McVeigh kind of situation too.
Yeah, so that's why he then says, you know, we'd have to identify the source. But here's the big question. He's using two terms. I mean, first, was he radicalized, and then the source of radicalization. To me, maybe it's because they've had such a difficult time pinning down motive, that they may be returning back after they found this arsenal of weapons and explosives and the amount of planning that went into this, that it did not meet their first kind of characteristics. They no longer believe this was necessarily someone acting completely alone, or else the girlfriend would not be a person of interest at this time.
They have confirmed that she's not a person
helping,
of interest.
You know, assisting in him gathering resources, finances, letting him use her identification to purchase things, check into places. She left a report. He disappeared from his home about a month ago, it looks like. So you were talking yesterday, was he making trips back to take these weapons in? We note that that hotel has got cameras of him taking his luggage in. So whether or not it was all somehow in his vehicle, he did purchase, it appears to be a new like minivan situation, so a large enough vehicle to put all that in one trip. You wouldn't have to make multiple trips. But so many questions still. And now days after, I mean, usually almost always by now in these incidents, we have figured out what was the driving force behind these horrendous and heinous acts?
All right, so here's the question, and I think this is the question. We don't know why the sheriff chose to use the word radicalization. New York Times, again, their reporter that's covering this said it was an interesting choice of words. It may not mean anything, she says, but that is a tantalizing word choice a day after ISIS pulled out its full court press to push their claim, because you can't ignore that ISIS has also said this was their guy, even though there's no evidence of that we've been told about that exists right now. But this is developing news as we speak, and obviously this is creating quite a stir. Let's go ahead and take a phone call. We got a lot of comments coming in. By the way, the reporters are now, well, not just the reporter, the sheriff has now confirmed that she is, in fact, a person of interest, because they've gone back and forth on that. Was not a person of interest, maybe a witness, now a person of interest. Now they're saying person of interest.
All right, let's go to Robbie in Virginia on line 3.
Hi, Robbie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for all that you do. My one question is, I know you had just mentioned about the video cameras at the hotel. Why haven't we seen the videos of the hotel? Because, I mean, I know there's security cameras all over that hotel, and it would be showing everything of him carrying them in and even carrying them to his room. And I'm just wondering why we haven't seen none of the security videos of this guy carrying his stuff.
They did
in.
Release some body cam. The police did just to give you the shooting.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that's probably information that is really necessary for the public to see at this point. This isn't not searching for who did this act. Usually when you see those videos, it's if you see this person, if you know this person, reach out to us. They're not just going to, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I just don't feel like they're just going to release those security footage now. We may see it later on, but right now, as the investigation is ongoing, I don't feel like it's probably. I mean, it's not pertinent for the
because they know who did it,
right?
Yeah, I mean, we're not searching for the perpetrator of the crime. We know.
Right.
Well, he may have had
an accomplice, and that
he
is
may
the
have, he may have had an accomplice.
They may not want to put that out.
Sometimes one wonders how he could have achieved all that he did into a hotel room and all that he did without somebody having some knowledge of what was going on. One wonders about that.
Yeah, but Logan, you said those hotels are gigantic. I mean, they are huge complexes.
Yeah.
So bringing 10 pieces of luggage in, it would not be unusual.
I mean, we've shot films there, documentaries, and brought to camera crews, and you're talking about dolly carts full of gear.
Heavy equipment.
In big, giant cases that you would see technically usually
like
for
a trade
kind of
show.
Or... Yeah, trade show, conventions, concerts. There are things that happen every night and every afternoon. There are bands that play 24/7 in Las Vegas. I think they're moving their gear in and out. There's entertainment continually happening, so that is never uncommon to see that when you are on the floor in one of these lobbies of the hotel.
But in every criminal case, you want to find out. There's always someone that knows more,
always.
Right? And so now it appears that the person that may know more is the female companion of Paddock. This is what the sheriff said about that, number 13.
suspect? Currently, she's a person of interest.
So she's a person of interest. And define that, and I've got a question for Jordan.
All right, a person of interest is a person who may have more than just a passing acquaintance of information that they have obtained through hearsay or through some source. This is a person who is believed to have relevant, credible, critical inside knowledge of the crime that we want to focus on, and in fact may be an aider and abettor in the crime.
Are you never surprised she came back voluntarily?
I am. I never expected that we would see her again, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I thought she would vanish into thin air and that we would never see or hear from her once again.
Yeah. And then they got the $100,000 that was transferred to the Philippines in the last week.
Yeah,
before his incident.
Before, she's been out of the country. She went back, but we don't know the goings on there. Potentially, she could have been told by U.S. authorities, if you don't voluntarily come back, we're going to have you arrested.
Yeah, and could have been.
That's a situation then that could push a lot of people to say, you know what, I'll come back. Could have financial resources in the United States, wants to, in their mind, thinks that they can get out of this situation unscathed and tell the police. We don't know about this, but they're a person of interest, not a suspect. It's all different terminology. But at this time, you would expect she is now being, at this point in time, being questioned about
by the
what
FBI.
She knew.
What's the first thing they're going to ask, Andy?
Tell me all you know about this guy. Did you live with him? Did you see anything suspicious about him? What do you know about his knowledge of guns? What do you know about who his accomplices are, his associates, rather, are? What videos does he watch? What television programs does he listen to? What periodicals and newspapers does he read? I want to know everything that you can tell me about Paddock, and I would be grilling her for a long time about that.
Now, could that lead, and it often does, I mean, I was a prosecutor too, I mean, it could lead to other potential witnesses.
Of
That's
course.
The idea here.
That's the idea, is to get leads so that you can then pursue further and get to the truth of what went on. She is intimately involved with him. We know that. I mean, they went to the bar together and got coffee, and he supposedly was very abusive toward her. That's not an unusual relationship in a situation such as this. But she is somebody that you really, really want to focus on intensively.
All right, we've got a lot more. We're going behind this. We're trying to give you an analysis from the investigative standpoint and trying to get our handle on what this word radicalization means with regard to the sheriff using it. I'm going to get into some where that could mean on the legal side when we come back from the break. Logan?
All right, yep. Give us a call right now, 1-800-684-3110, to get your comments in online. Got a couple lines available. Again, that's at 1-800-684-3110. If you want your voice heard, now's the time to do it. Sharon, if you're watching online, thousands of you are watching right now. You can be part of that discussion on Facebook. It's facebook.com/jseculo. Also broadcasting on aclj.org, Twitter, and Periscope at jseculo. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. The sheriff says they want to make sure. Let's play it again. I think it's important to play it. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He said, and by the way, we're not condemning. This isn't critical of the sheriff at all. He said it. He may have evidence. There may be something that's got that. Yeah. There's a reason he said it. I mean, he didn't just randomly pick the word radicalization. We're going to break that down for you. Here's what the sheriff said.
I want to understand the motivation that you describe, okay, to prevent any future incidents. And, you know, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us? And we want to identify that source.
All right, so Logan, during the break, you asked an important question that people are asking on our social media platforms. I'm sure our radio audience,
people are just asking it in general, and I think this is something that even me, and I had to kind of question how it all worked, which was why until maybe today, until things started coming out, the word terrorist is not used. It's something that's not used. And I think that's because there are actual classifications of what that means. Yes, to us as human beings, you see someone, you know, kill massive amounts of people and do this very targeted attack.
It's an act of terror when they do it.
In your head, this is a terrorist.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the legal standard, there is something.
Yeah, so of course it's an act of terror in the sense that it brought terror to people that were there. But there's a legal standard for what constitutes terrorism. Now, we had a meeting yesterday before our broadcast because a lot of us are former government lawyers. Andy, of course, was U.S. attorney. I was in Treasury. We know these statutory definitions. And we said, based on the evidence that was around yesterday, it did not appear to meet the legal standard. I mean, it's obviously a crime. It's mass murder. There's a number of felony death penalty kind of cases here, life imprisonment cases. No question about that. But to really meet the definition of domestic terrorism, this is what it means. This is under 18 U.S.C., and that's the criminal code, section 2331, which is the definition provision. The term domestic terrorism means activities that involve an act of danger to human life that are in violation of the criminal laws of the United States. Clearly, Andy, the killing of these individuals would meet the standard threshold one.
That's right. That's
okay.
Correct.
Threshold two, though, this is B, that action, the murder of these, the killing of these people, was done to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, and kidnapping. So when you look at the purpose clause of why the action was taken, the action of mass murder here, was it done to intimidate or coerce a civilian population or to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion? The sheriff then raises the issue of radicalization. That brings into play at that point, if you're the U.S. attorney and the FBI, Andy, at that point you are looking at 18 U.S.C. 2331's definition of domestic terrorism.
Yes, because by adding this phrase radicalization, unbeknownst to us, he has added the element that may put it within the purview of this particular statute, which yesterday, because we didn't know that word had not been dropped by the sheriff or by any law enforcement, it may in fact bring it within the purview of 18 U.S.C. 2331, because certainly an act of danger to human life, he committed murder, mass murder here. And it was intended to coerce the civilian population or intimidate potentially government policy. So he may now be a domestic terrorist under the legal definition.
So radicalization, though, Jordan, and this is important for our entire audience, doesn't necessarily mean, although ISIS has claimed credit for this, it doesn't necessarily mean religiously motivated ideology. It can be philosophical. It can be political. There's a number of areas in which it falls in.
There's a source of that. Now, that could be text. I mean, that could be treaties that you're reading or treatises or manifestos of various actors. We have, you know, hate groups. We have, nationalist organizations who, the Timothy McVeigh type, in a sense, the anti-government types. He didn't, on his face, no one has pointed to that. It's not like anyone they've interviewed said, this guy, you know, he hated the government. He didn't like, you know, the post office. He didn't like the postman. He didn't like the people treading on his property. It didn't seem like that. It just seemed like he was just kind of standoffish, but without a political ideology, not someone known as religious to people who knew him, but not very. That's why this woman is so important. Hardly anyone knew him. And so I'm scratching off his family as people that knew him. They had no idea who he was anymore.
Yeah. That clearly.
I mean, they said he wasn't into guns, so we know that they're already wrong.
They said he wasn't
politically
motivated.
They also the one that claimed he had lots of money. I mean, he did transfer $100,000. That's different than being a multimillionaire. And, you know, this could have been every dime he's had. Now he's 64 years old. He's spent to do this. We just don't know. I mean,
yeah.
We haven't gotten confirmation yet from the casinos yet, have we, about how much? A lot of that's reporting.
No evidence that is factual-based evidence as to gambling debt.
Right, as to any debt, exactly. And that's a big deal.
But even there, yeah, that would still.
And if he had $100,000 in cash he could wire like that to a foreign country, that rate.
And he'd been gambling for decades. This was nothing
new. And people who actually had met him in Florida at a home there where they said a few times had been there, he told everybody that.
Yeah,
so that was the one thing he did tell
He was a big
everybody.
High roller, they call him. All right, let's go ahead and take a phone call. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're also monitoring the Senate Intelligence Committee, giving an update on so-called Russia meddling into the 2016 election. So if there's any news there, we will take a look at that. All right.
Let's go to Jennifer's calling California on line 4.
Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Jay, I want to thank you for coverage. I wanted to let you know that an observation, my heart is deeply grieved, but the observation I've made is that regardless of whether he is characterized as either an international or a domestic terrorist, the level by which and the resources he used to stockpile 49 weapons and to perch high above his victims. In my own knowledge, I know that since Columbine, the level of numbers of shootings has there been another shooting where somebody has actually perched high above victims, chosen a population of 22,000 and just mowed people down with automatic machines? That's what.
In 1966 at the University of Texas, you had the clock tower killing. That did not, but it was not the mass number I think 6 people were killed, I believe was the number. It was random, but you didn't have the mass concentration of people, although you had a lot.
But you had someone using a high ground. I mean, there's a reason why military talks about taking the high ground. You want to, you know, when you have the high ground, it's easier to secure the high ground from enemies and from those who may be attacking you. And then once the police and security, you know, it makes it more difficult for everybody, and you have a view, a scope, if you will. And so he was, listen, unlike Timothy McVeigh, who had the military background, who had backgrounds of any kind of, you know, to be involved in anything that involves weaponry in a professional sense, training in a professional sense, this individual did not have that. So he didn't put this together. They said spent a considerable amount of time planning this event. So this was not something that he just snapped 3 days ago even. So not just when he checked into the hotel with guns and was this was something that would take months and months to prepare for. You know, could take a year to actually gather the resources necessary and understand. And there's a report that he may have tried to do it about a month ago. There was another music festival there.
Yeah.
Couldn't get the right room. And because he couldn't get the right room, a different building, different property, that got scratched.
But music festivals are there. I mean, Logan, this is an area that's constant venue for music.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're trying to give you some analysis here about the legal consequences of whether this is now a terrorism kind of matter. Again, doesn't mean it's ISIS, although they've claimed it. But what the definition and consequences of a domestic terrorism allegation are. We're here for another 30 minutes. Logan's going to let you know how you can get the rest of the broadcast.
That's right. If you don't get us on your local station, you can find us broadcasting live right now on social media and at ACLJ.org. That's at ACLJ.org, Facebook.com/JSeculo, Periscope and Twitter at JSeculo. You can find us there, archived on the ACLJ app or the JSeculo podcast. Be right back.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I want to start with the developments overnight in the situation in Las Vegas. The sheriff, in during a press conference, raised the issue of radicalization. This was something that the FBI said there was no evidence initially that this took place. Of course, now they've done more forensics. They've done more evidence gathering. There's evidently some kind of note that was written. But this, the sheriff brought up, and really was not in response to the question, just trying to figure out what the motive was here. Let me play for you again what the sheriff said and what the consequences of that statement actually are.
I want to understand the motivation that you describe, okay, to prevent any future incidents. And, you know, did this person get radicalized unbeknownst to us? And we want to identify that source.
That is a very significant statement when the sheriff makes this. The New York Times even reported that this was a big statement. Maybe it's not what he intended, but he's not corrected it in 24 hours almost, or at least in 18 hours since he said it. And he used the word radicalization. Now, it does not mean necessarily Islamic radicalization, but, Andy, it now changes the way in which this investigation is framed.
Well, it certainly does. And I think it is relevant and important that he has not retracted that statement,
right,
Jay. You know, if he had made a slip of the tongue and said radicalization unbeknownst to us and didn't mean the kind of radicalization that we have been talking about, you would have thought that as a responsible law enforcement official, he would have pulled back on that. But he hadn't done that.
He hasn't done that because radicalization, again, can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't just mean ISIS, although, again, ISIS is in a very uncharacteristic way, the way they've kind of tripled down on their claim of sponsorship of this, that this was a soldier of the caliphate, they said. And the FBI initially said there's no evidence on that. Now we've got the word radicalization being used, and even got the New York Times saying, well, that's an unusual word to be used, changes the dynamic of this. Radicalization, though, does not mean religious necessarily.
That's right. And so it can be politically radicalized without any kind of religious affiliation. It means some kind of affiliation with,
right,
or an adoption of an ideology. So the sheriff also used the word, you know, finding the source. The source could be a book. The source could be the online rants of someone else about various topics. But what it does is it uncovers, it goes back to that definition of domestic terrorism. It goes back to the idea that this was not just done to kill, because this person had a grudge to wanted to kill and take lives, and that was somehow, it was deranged like that. It means it was done purposefully in that person's mind,
yep,
because they wanted to push some sort of agenda,
yep,
and cause some kind of conversation. We haven't gotten to that point yet. We don't know what that agenda may be. We don't really have any inklings of it yet, except for the Islamic State has almost like tripled down on this attack being one of their, this attack or this individual being one of their soldiers.
If in fact it is a radicalization of political, philosophical, religious, ideological, it then can fit within the definition of domestic terrorism, which means you have to involve a danger to human life. That would clearly happen here. But also was intended to intimidate, of course, a civilian population, or to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. So it would then fit within the definition of domestic terrorism, which is in the post-Timothy McVeigh situation. It takes on a whole different criminality. So we will look at that when we come back from the break. We're also going to take your phone calls. Our phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. What are we seeing, Logan, online? What I'm seeing, just as statements are going through, is that a lot of people are asking this question, why is it not being called terrorism?
Yeah, I think that's a common question, because your head goes immediately to, this is terrorism, it's a terrorist,
well,
it's terrorism.
Yeah, if this guy had fit the typical profile of a Islamic radical, which now is not as typical as it used to be, but within that general age parameter, country of origin parameter, or if they were U.S., how they were radicalized. I mean, we've had Americans that have been radicalized that were not Islamic that converted Islam. This guy was 10 years out of their otherwise highest, oldest jihadi. So that doesn't fit, but the evidence is just coming in. We're going to take your calls and comments when we come back from the break at 1-800-684-3110, and we'll also be playing for our friends on Facebook and Periscope an exclusive video coming right up.
This is a critical time for our nation, and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We are joined by Colonel Wes Smith. He is, of course, one of our key senior advisors on military issues, but also on terrorism. Let me go ahead and take a phone call. Andy Economo is still with us, of course, and the rest of the team here. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a call, Logan.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Carol, who's calling in California online too.
Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. And for all you guys do.
Yep.
My question is, and I haven't heard it answered, is how long in advance did he book that room?
That's a good question. We know that he got to the room 4 days before. We know that he'd stayed at that hotel on multiple times. I think there was a time when he stayed there maybe for months. He was deemed what was called a high roller, which means usually these rooms were comped, is the way it works in Las Vegas. But we don't know how far in advance he booked it. But clearly, I
mean, they do, I'm sure. But
yeah, evidence has not been released yet. But he obviously knew that there was a major event about to go there.
Yes, and there's a report that he was looking at another major event before, and that major event, similar in size, using the same kind of staging, could not get the right room. It was a different place he was looking at. He was looking at a different location, a different room. He could not get that room. And so that was in May, I believe. So he ultimately did not carry out that, was not able to carry out attack then. So it looks like someone who was really planning.
Yeah. And the question, I guess, that is asked here, we now know about the $100,000 going to the Philippines. What was that all about?
Yeah, we don't know if he actually sent that money to her or if he sent it to someone else in the Philippines. And again, we don't want to get too far ahead of the story and deal with a lot of conjecture. But on the other hand, if he sent it to some other entity or group or individual in the Philippines, you have to wonder about it simply because of the religious makeup of the Philippines. More and more ISIS and radical Islamists have a presence in the Western Pacific. 10% of the Philippine population is Muslim. They are fighting their own radical Islamist groups. The government is there. So it makes you wonder, again, yeah. And I don't want to get too far ahead of the story, but you wonder.
Well, I think these are all things now investigators have to be looking at. You can't ignore $100,000 going over to the Philippines. You can't ignore the female companion of his that's now at least voluntarily come back to the country. You can't ignore the fact that he had the stockpile of weapons, including explosives. You can't ignore the fact that the sheriff said the word radicalization. None of that can be ignored, Andy.
No, I mean, I still find it very curious, Jay, that this woman came back to the United States. She was had an Australian passport.
Yep.
She was in the in the Philippines. She had no particular motive or reason, it seems to me, to come back and face the music of questioning that was going to occur, inevitably is occurring with respect to her by agents of the FBI and other law enforcement. Why in the world would she ever come back? That's the thing that is curious to me. If I was her, I would have disappeared or have resisted it, unless she thought that there was an extradition treaty between the United States and the Philippines that was going to inevitably bring her back anyway. But I would never have come back again, it just seems to me.
Well, and in addition to the things you listed, Jay, we can't forget the key piece of the evidence concerning radicalization is that ISIS has tripled down on their claim that he was indeed one of their soldiers.
Yeah, it's not like no one is claiming this. The one group with an ideology and that is considered radical and that radicalizes people, it's not like no one is claiming this. There is one group, and they're the number one terror organization in the world right now, and they have been the most effective in the last a few years at carrying out attacks and taking people and radicalizing. What they haven't done is
they have utilized music venues. They may have done that a lot.
And though he does not fit a lot of their characteristics, one of the people they radicalized was 9 years younger, but someone in their 50s, that means. So not everybody radicalized by ISIS has been a young person. That has been is why this individual could have slipped through the cracks more easily, is because they don't fit the other characteristics of somebody who's highly involved online, would have been in secret chat rooms or utilizing deep in the dark web technology. That being said, he was pretty technically savvy for someone carrying out this attack. I mean, just the basics of the attack show that, which means we don't know what kind of documents have been found on his computer. We don't even know if a computer has been found.
Yep.
That has not been made clear to us. Or a phone. We don't know about that. Or a smartphone. All of that still remains a mystery. And to me, law enforcement kind of has a duty. By the end of this week, people need to have some idea, especially in Las Vegas, and the people who got injured or lost their lives and the families. If there is reasoning behind this, what was it? Because people need to kind of be able to process it. Yeah. And I think not being able to process it, just stop doing these press conferences every 3 hours if you got no information to share. And if you're going to start doing these, if this was a slip of the tongue, this was a very problematic slip of the tongue. They should have already corrected if it wasn't.
Well, I don't think it was a slip of the tongue because I think by now they would have corrected it. All right, we're taking your calls. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Marcel is calling from Nevada on line 3. Marcel, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you, guys. Hey, listen, I'm a United States Marine Corps veteran, right? And I live in Vegas. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I put my life on the line for the country, stood up for all Americans. And I wanted to say that first because I want to point out, whenever I state in a forum like this, I was in your chat earlier, and, I simply said, it's just, why can't it just be another white man or another American who happens to be white who went off the deep end and shot up a lot of people? It seems like everybody's trying to make it, he must have been radicalized. It couldn't be.
Well, no, I mean, we, as you know, on this broadcast, Marcel, we kind of dismissed the radicalization issue yesterday. I don't know if you caught the broadcast. Did you catch the broadcast yesterday?
No, but okay, go ahead.
So let me just tell you what we did, because I said the ISIS thing made no sense to us, because we follow ISIS, we follow their methods, and this didn't really fit. I mean, the method did, but the profile did not fit your typical radicalized, if you want to call it that. But then all of a sudden, the sheriff made that statement based on the afternoon press conference, and that kind of changed how you have to view it. And all I'm saying, from a legal standpoint, if there was some kind of radicalization, by the way, it doesn't mean it's ISIS. It could be political, philosophical, whatever it is. That fits in under domestic terrorism statute. So, Marcel, that's what I was talking about. I hope that clarifies that.
I'm not necessarily even going by what you guys are saying. I mean, everybody is saying the same thing, you know what I mean? So look, as a veteran, I'm embarrassed because this happened. I don't care if the guy was black or orange. This happened within America.
You're right. The nature of it's the largest mass shooting in U.S. history. I mean, that's how they're claiming this. So that's what this is. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and I respect Marcel's service to our country, and he's living in Las Vegas, living through this right now. But people who go crazy don't plan to go crazy over a year. You know, I mean, and that's what they're talking about, to plan this kind of activity, to set up cameras to monitor your room. This is not someone grabbing an assault rifle, buying it legally because they have no other criminal record, and then going to shoot up the closest place. This fits more of the profile of someone planning, which means though they may have been turned, and in a sense, to most of us, that would be crazy, because to most people, you can't turn most people into terrorists who would carry out an attack like this and lose their own life. That you've got to have this motivating kind of fact that keeps you going over a period of time to where you're putting all of this together, knowing that the end game of this is not only are you going to be carrying out this horrific attack on innocent people, but you yourself, you're no longer considering those people innocent, and you yourself are giving your life. You know that your life is over by carrying out this attack. That is different than, I think, a teenager grabbing an assault rifle and going to a school.
Andy?
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, this is... We cannot discount the fact that the possibility that he may have been intellectually radicalized because the sheriff has let that come out inadvertently or not. But in it, and as Jordan said, this doesn't necessarily mean a religious or an Islamic radicalization. This could be ideology, and that could have been sort of just brewing in him for all these years. And finally, he just decides, like McVeigh, to burst onto the scene, literally, as he did in this terrible fashion.
What are you seeing in this, Wes?
Well, I think that the trigger point for the media beginning to wonder whether or not it was Islamist type of radicalization is that in our everyday parlance of how we speak about domestic or foreign terror, Jay, we do not use the word radicalize. We haven't thus far when it comes to domestic terrorists or to simply crazy people.
Right.
That term is exclusively used up until now anyway when you're talking about radical Islamic terror.
But the radicalization issue could impact domestic terrorism just as easily.
Yeah.
Let's go right back to the phones. Let's take another call. Susie's calling from Charleston, South Carolina on line one. Susie, go ahead.
Hey, my concern is that the media seems to take any words that anybody uses and just explodes with it. You can't just use common words. You can't use a... you have to go to a thesaurus or a dictionary and.
But do you think that? But here the sheriff. Here the sheriff used the word radicalized.
Right.
That's
said. There's a lot of different definitions for radicalized.
Oh yes, no question about that. We've been laying that out. But that's a loaded word in today's environment.
You don't throw that word around loosely in 2017 because the term that it's mostly likely associated with is Islamic. I mean, that's just the bottom line truth. Our president made a big deal about that during the campaign, and then the opponent ended up saying it. Radical Islam. There's a reason why that term radical is there, so people would stay away from it if they could.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
In responding to the sheriff's use of the words, if he was radicalized unbeknownst to us, we want to know why or how. A New York Times reporter said this: that is a tantalizing word choice a day after ISIS pulled out all of its full court press to push their claim. And that's why we're raising that issue with you today, and that's why this is important. All right, this is our last segment of the broadcast, so we take phone calls. Kathy's calling on line 4 from Minnesota. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi there. I've never called before, but I just felt compelled. This woman that has lived with him, she must have known about those weapons and everything. For her to say that she is guiltless is beyond my imagination. I mean, because she could have, if she saw these weapons, she should have contacted the FBI or the police or something about, my boyfriend's got all these weapons and I don't know what he's going to do.
Well, this is, look, I mean, this is, Annie, this is the first question that's going to be, Kathy, thanks for calling in. This is going to be the first question that they're going to ask. Did you notice the stockpiling of weapons?
I mean, really, wouldn't you ask that question if you had been the girlfriend of this man and you would not have noticed that he had stockpiled weapons in the various residences that he had, or that he was transporting them to and from this hotel? And then mysteriously, a few days before the incident, he tells her that I'm going to send you to the Philippines, and then he sends her $100,000. Surely she is a person who knows a great deal and needs to really be examined in great depth.
Yeah, I mean, this should be the key to unlocking a lot about this individual. How much... Because concealing this from someone you're living with is very difficult, unless she's been gone. We don't know how long she's been gone for, right?
Right.
We don't know how long he's been gone. Some reports are that no one's seen him in that neighborhood for at least a month. So some of it may have been concealed from her, but no indication of some mass gun buying spree that was done in just like the last 2 weeks. He purchased a few weapons, but that would be not uncommon from a gun dealer. From someone who clears all the background checks and shows no signs of anything wrong and comes in, purchases weapons. I mean, illegally, still some reports hanging out there that there may have been an actual automatic weapon at play, that not all of them were using this, what is called a bump stock. That would, again, indicate some things. But I think the girlfriend, partner, whoever was living inside of his world, closest to his mind, has got to know more than anyone else, and hopefully she's willing to share that.
Yeah, and in addition to all the weapons that he had stockpiled in various residences, I think it should be a red flag to a normal paramour, to a partner living with someone, if they have ammonium nitrate and electronic detonation kind of devices, which they're saying they found, you know, ammonium nitrate, which is used for explosives, unless you're a farmer. And I think surely she had to be suspicious if she knew that.
Well, especially with that kind of, but take people inside a room when you've got a witness like this. What do you do, Annie?
Well, you set them down and you ascertain who they are, what their relationship is with him, how long she has known him, the details of the things that he may have engaged in terms of political activities, his videos that he watches, the television, what he reads, what periodicals he takes. And then about the guns. Did you not notice these guns? Have you been living with him? Why did you go to the Philippines? What did he tell you with regard to why he wanted you to leave the country? Why did he send you the money? What did you do with the money when you got it? Why have you come back? Why didn't you stay away? I mean, I could sit there for days questioning this witness.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call. Jordan, let's take line 2.
All right, let's go to Jane in Ohio on line 2. Jane, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. This is my first call. But for the only thing I think should be changed immediately is the hotels. When anybody has a sign outside their door, not disturbed for 4 days, there should be something looked into, because 4 days is a little too long.
Maybe, I mean, look, I don't disagree. I mean, 4 days is a long time for do not disturb. I mean, people do it. These are high roller hotels. They may have a lot of money in there, but still.
Also, I don't. I mean, with the size of these hotels, I mean, if you're the people who's job it is to clean the rooms, which is the only people that would really be accessing that regularly. I mean, it's the giant hotel. You move on. I don't think you necessarily would. They may have notes. They usually would have notes.
They do
they
have
clean
to.
The room.
I did see yesterday in reports that if there's an extensive time where there is a do not enter the room, they will make sure the person is alive. Yeah. They will also make sure, and they will contact the person in the room. But if the person says, I do not want my room changed, they won't change the room.
No, and he ordered food a day before.
Yeah.
So they knew he was alive.
Yeah.
He just didn't let people in the room. Yeah. There's a
again,
difference.
These are all questions that need to be asked.
But people do quirky things, and that's why I don't think you can blame, you know, the janitorial staff or for a few days in Vegas saying do not disturb at a giant facility where you move on to the next room and the next room and the next room and again.
All right, let's grab the call on line one.
All right, let's go to Andy in Illinois on line one. Andy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Andy, go ahead.
Morning, guys. Good morning.
Hey.
My thought was if he is or happens to be a part of ISIS, he would not have had to have purchased all those guns. I mean, they would provide all the weapons and ammunition that he needed. So
their individual cells go out and execute, utilize the laws of the United States and buy and acquire the guns and ammunition. Now, you couldn't acquiring that ammonium nitrate. You can do it, but it is registered, and there's a whole system in place on that. We're calling the explosives. But no, they don't usually ship in the weaponry.
No.
They generally allow their cell operatives. Again, no evidence that this guy was ISIS, and the fact that they said radicalized doesn't mean jihadist radicalization. Yeah. But it would not be usual that they would ship in the munitions.
Right, because if that was the case, you'd see a lot more of those attackers using a high-powered weaponry in Europe. They don't oftentimes, if it's not accessible. They're using vehicles, knives, sometimes assault weapons that may have been trafficked in through the, you know, a kind of a criminal market. But that's a rarity when they're actually carrying out attacks not on the battlefield. And I think in the United States, if you've got an individual who will carry out an attack for you, who has a record that's clean so that they can go purchase these weapons, and then has the knowledge to turn them into automatic weapons, that's a perfect attacker a perfect recruit, if you will, for a terrorist organization of any kind.
What do you think, Wes?
Yeah, ISIS, their modus operandi is that they tell people all over the world to use whatever you have. They say vehicles, knives, guns.
Yep.
In America, because it is so easy to get firearms, look at what happened in Orlando and San Bernardino. In both of those cases, people who were radicalized use weapons that they had acquired legally.
Yeah,
and so
no evidence that he acquired them illegally, and no evidence that they were even modified illegally. Although the explosive, that may be a different question. Let's try to grab one last question here, Laurie. Very quickly from Washington State, you're on the air.
Yes, hi Jay.
Hey.
and Jordan and everyone. My biggest concern right now is the fact that people have stopped looking at other people as having a reason or respect for all life. And I think that this is just an indication of how sick our world is. It's not just the society here, but the fact that we have stopped looking at every individual having a right to live wherever they are, whatever they're doing, whatever their belief system or anything else.
Well, that's why motive becomes important in crime, because you want to try to prevent. And what was it that caused this person to do the action he did? And that is being investigated now by the FBI. It is being investigated by the Department of the Treasury through ATF. I'm sure it is being investigated as well by the police and law enforcement in Las Vegas, Nevada. As more information is available on this, we'll continue analyzing it. We'll have more information tomorrow and some action out of the Senate as well. Again, if you want to get more information, you know how to do that. To go over to ACLJ.org. Like us on Facebook. I've got a page. Jordan has a page. Logan has a page. The ACLJ has a page. We encourage you to do that. Sign up for our newsletters as well. And support the work of the ACLJ. You could do that by going to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.